You're listening to Mr. Goodyear's Neighborhood, produced by The Banyan Collective. Find more episodes of Mr. Goodyear's Neighborhood at thebanyancollective.com and on iTunes. Mr. Goodyear's Neighborhood, a podcast about a mountain town run by mountain people.
Thanksgiving. All right, John, who are we sitting down with here today on Mr. Goodyear's Neighborhood?
Yeah, we're here with the Mr. Ogden Marathon. We've renamed Riley Cook, who less than a week ago won the Ogden Marathon with a time of 2:25:51. So my first question, Riley, is you've just won the Ogden Marathon. What are you going to do now?
That's a good question. I'm going to keep training. I didn't, with the bad weather, I didn't quite get the time that I wanted, so I'm still hungry for a fast marathon time.
So you don't have any of that postpartum marathon depression. Like, you're motivated, rearing up, and anxious to get out there again, it sounds like.
I was, I have a little bit of the depression when I take the couple days off after the marathon, but then I get right back to it.
Well, I want to shoot all the important questions at you first. So the first key question we need to ask is, what shoe did you run in?
I ran in the Brooks Pure Cadence. It's a lighter stability shoe. I guess technically it's a trainer, a light stability trainer. But I have pretty sensitive feet, and a lot of the flats give me blisters, and I need some stability. And so that shoe fits like a glove. I absolutely love it for the longer distances.
So for those runners that went out and ran a five-hour marathon, that's the shoe they need to be investing in next time, you would say. All right, well, that's all the shoe talk. But let's, so 2:25:51, you've been chasing the Ogden Marathon victory for a while now. And I, during my prep for this interview, I read your blog on the Fast Running blog and your race report.
Awesome. Yeah.
And you have a long and lengthy history with the Ogden Marathon. And in the paper, you're quoted that, the Ogden Marathon has been your kryptonite. So maybe walk us through some of the history over the last several years with, your relationship, your love-hate relationship
sure.
with the Ogden
yeah,
Marathon.
Sure. So in 2011 was the first time that I signed up for the Ogden Marathon. My training back then wasn't anywhere near what it is today. I ran for Weber State, and I graduated there in 2006, and I took about 3 years off of running, and then I started running kind of casually, recreationally again 3 years after that in 2009. And so the Ogden Marathon was my first, in 2011 was my first time really training for a marathon, although now I would say I didn't really train very much. But so I ran in 2011, and I got sick halfway through, actually at mile 14 going up that hill, and I threw up there at that spot, and then again at mile 18, right when you start the downhill off the spillway, and I got really dehydrated and started cramping really badly. And so I asked a spectator for a cell phone, and I called my wife. She didn't answer, and then I called my mother. And she answers the phone, not recognizing the phone number. And I said, "Hey, Mom, it's me." And she says, "Riley, what are you doing calling me? You're supposed to be running." And I'm like,
"Just wanted to say hello, Mom."
I said, "I'm in bad shape. I'm in the canyon, and I'm not going to make it. So if you could tell Amy, who's my wife, to meet me at the bottom of the canyon, I need a ride." So I walked down slowly with my legs cramping, and my wife picked me up there. So I had to drop out in 2011. 2012, I was scared of the marathon because of 2011, so I ran the half marathon that year. I took second to Bryant Jensen in 108. And then finally, I'd done a few other marathons. I finally said, all right, it's time to run the Ogden Marathon again in 2013. And nothing really, I thought I was prepared for that race. I had a really good year in 2013, and I don't have any excuses whatsoever. I didn't throw up. I didn't need to use the restroom or anything. I just had a really bad day in 2013. It was what I thought it was going to end up being, my worst marathon of all time. And then in 14, I was injured, so I didn't run the race. And then in last year, I thought, well, I'm going to run the Ogden Marathon again. I've tried twice. It's gone terribly. One dropout, my worst marathon. This time I'm going to get it. And so last year, again, it rained, and I thought I was good to go, and it was very eerily similar to 2011. I got sick. I threw up at mile 16, and I threw up again at mile 18 in almost the exact same spot as 2011, just going down that steep hill off the spillway. But I toughed it out that year. I was in really bad shape again last year. But
is this nerves or?
No, I have a problem where I have like a mucus buildup when I run long distances sometimes. I've recently think that I have that under control. I believe it's exercise-induced acid reflux. So I just started taking medication, and it seems to help this year.
So he's a doctor on the side.
Yeah, there you go. I've done a lot of research trying to diagnose that. So I finished last year. I finished the race, but I ended up in the medical tent for an hour afterwards with like borderline hypothermia, and it was even slower than 2013, which I didn't think was possible. So then finally, and then that brings us to this year, where I trained harder than ever, and I was saying I'm gonna do it this year. I don't care what happens. I'm going.
So I have Brian Nicholson here too. He's the marketing director for the Goal Foundation, the producers of the Ogden Marathon. And Riley and I were speaking before the interview, and he pointed out the fact that he's ran the race in 2013, took off 14, which was a nice year, and then ran in 15 and 16, again all wet weather days. So Brian, there's your problem right there, it's Riley.
So you're no longer invited.
Yeah, I know.
You're going to bring rain with you.
I thought that might be coming.
No, just joking. I think this year people were way more positive on all their comments on Facebook and social media, that at least that I could tell. Either they're getting used to it or they're just accepting the fact that it may rain. It's in May. You know, there's based on all the research I've done over the past 60 years, there's only really a 25% chance based on history that it will rain on the third Saturday of May. So I think we're hanging about right with the averages, but it certainly was a good win for you, and we're really proud of you.
Thank you. Thanks.
And I'm going to throw this question out to both you, Brian and Riley, and that's, you know, Riley's not unique in that a lot of people have problems with stomach issues on this race, and, you know, they sign up thinking, oh, it's all downhill, and, you know, the Ogden Marathon is going to be easy, but people struggle on this course. I mean, why do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of it is you're running the downhill for the first 8 miles, and I think some people get going a little bit faster than they had planned or anticipated because they feel good on this downhill. And then you get to really what is 9 miles of rolling hills at 5,000 feet of elevation. And to me, that's what those 9 miles make or break the race. That's where the race is won in my mind. And a lot of people struggle on those miles because they were feeling good on the downhill those first eight. And so they may have dug a little bit of a hole pace-wise, and then they hit those rolling hills and it just kind of eats them up. And by the time they get to the canyon, which is where you should really be able to start rolling with a downhill, they're kind of already spent.
Kind of clinging for life is my experience.
Yeah, that's my theory.
Well, every successful runner has a very supportive running network of friends that, you know, help them train. So tell us about, I know you're part of the Ogden crew and the Utah running race team, and you've had some sponsorship opportunities with like Brooks Running. Tell us about the people you train with and how do you train?
Okay, yeah, sure. We have there's an app, it's called GroupMe. It's kind of like a group text message. We have about 15 of us that live here in the Ogden area, a couple guys in Davis County, and we use that every week, almost every day, to set up runs. And so if you want to go for a training run, you just hop on there and you say, hey, tomorrow morning, 5 a.m., I'm going running from, we meet a lot at the Smiths there on Harrison and 42nd. And, you know, people say, yeah, I'm in. And so we meet up, and we'll usually have about 4 to 5 guys, but it sometimes rotates. And it's a lot of the, you know, some of the faster guys in this area. But specifically here for
I don't mean to cut you off.
Yeah,
when
no problem.
Say faster guys, tell me about fast. Like, is there room for a 10-minute mile, an hour guy? Or?
Yeah. You know, anyone's welcome to come run with us. We can't. We still run our own paces, regardless of who shows up. But
we can't be held responsible for how far behind you get.
Yeah, that's right. but for this marathon, for the Ogden Marathon, specifically, I worked mostly with Ken Richardson and Ben Van Beekum. And the three of us, we came up with a training schedule. And you guys will love this. We just kind of met this guy on the internet that's from Ireland. His name's John. We've never personally met him. We don't know a whole lot about him, but he's been like
John from Ireland.
John from Ireland. Okay. He's been an advisor on our training. Not necessarily a coach, but we've been running our training by him, and he's pretty knowledgeable and he helps us out. It's just kind of funny. I told my wife, we just have some random Irish guy advising us on our training, and it's working. It's going awesome.
Yeah, he's not random anymore. People will find him. Yeah.
It'd be hilarious if he was like a Homer Simpson guy in his basement in Ireland. I want to see if these guys can do 4 minute miles. Yeah.
For all we know, the guy could be completely crazy, you know, giving us workout schedules and like, no way can they do this workout. And then we do it and he's like, oh crap, they did it. All right, try this crazy workout.
Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, we did a lot of, this time around, we did a lot of marathon specific workouts, focused a lot on specificity right around the marathon pace. We would do long intervals, which were just a little bit faster than marathon pace, and then we would do long tempo runs, a little bit slower than marathon pace, and hope that that would kind of funnel to where our body would want to go right at marathon pace.
Now, I would invite anybody to go read your race report at the Fast Running Blog. Is it fastrunningblog.com or .org?
.com,
.com,
yeah.
.com, and then they can search for Riley Cook on there and read your race report, but... Well, could you just maybe, to the best of your memory, just take us through your marathon on Saturday from,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
from wherever you want to start at.
All right.
From when it started raining to when you finished, maybe.
Yeah.
Wait. So, yeah, that's, in fact, at the, you know, we're up at the start line, and those the first buses arrive early, and those people stand in the rain for 2 hours.
Very early. Yeah.
So, are you VIP? Were you able to kind of warm? Or?
I was not VIP. No.
Yeah.
So. I've run.
Will be next year, right, Brian? Yeah. The winner gets the nice bus next year.
Right.
So having run it three times now in the rain,
yeah.
Whether rain was in the forecast or not, I was going to be prepared, right? So I actually brought up a tarp that I could fold up and put into my drop bag, and I brought one of those Mylar space blankets, you know. Cool. And so Ken, Ben, and I, we laid the tarp out on the wet grass, and then we threw the blanket up over us and just had three guys cuddling to stay warm for an hour and a half laying out in the field.
That's a straight mountaineering technique right here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty funny. But the blanket kept the rain off us for the most part. And so we were able to stay somewhat warm. But the race, you know, a lot of people may not think this looking at the results, but it was probably one of the deepest fields that Ogden's had up front, I believe. You had Anthony Castales, who won the race last year and who actually ran a 2:17 marathon, I think 2 years ago, to qualify for the Olympic trials. You had Bryant Jensen, who has the new course record at the St. George Marathon in 2:15, and he won the Ogden Marathon in 2013. So you had the two previous winners, and then there was me, and there was Ken and Ben, and those guys are in the best marathon shapes of their lives. I feel like I was in the best marathon shape of my life. And then you had this wild card from Montana who ran a 105 half marathon last year down here in Utah at the American Fork half marathon. So you had a pretty deep field there. I thought we were going to have six guys for sure go under 2 hours and 30 minutes. And the race got started. A pack of four formed immediately. It was Anthony, Bryant, this guy from Montana, Colin, and me. And we get running, we're about 2 miles in, and this guy from Montana says, "Howdy, boys. I'm from Montana. The name's Colin. Nice to meet you."
That's awesome.
He gets
on
himself.
Yeah. Oh my God. And I thought, hey, man, this guy's awesome. I like this guy right away, man.
That's funny.
But there was already a light headwind. It wasn't anything too serious. And I suggested to Anthony and Bryant, I know those guys pretty well, I said, "Hey, you guys want to trade leads? Try to work together here early on in the race." And they said, sure. So I led at first, and then Brian took the lead. Anthony took the lead. And then after that, Anthony, he didn't really seem interested in taking turns leading anymore. He seemed more interested in trying to get a little bit of a lead himself. So I moved up to try to take the lead again, and he stayed on my side. And then he kind of got like a little bit of a gap on us, and then he would come back. And he got another gap, and Bryant looked back at me, and he said, "Should we go?" And I said, "No, we're fine. Just don't worry about it." It's
so at this point in time, just to clarify, you're having these conversations at what pace?
Well, so the first miles, we were kind of warming up, so it was like 5:30 pace. And then once Anthony started moving it, we got down
into at that pace, but yeah.
We got down into the 5:10s once Anthony started the race moving, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But he would get a little bit of a gap, but then he would come back to us, and then he'd try to get a little bit of a gap, and he'd come back. And the weather with the headwind was just not conducive to getting a lead. He ran a courageous race, I thought, but the weather just wasn't cooperating with him trying to get an early lead. So we got, you know, down the downhill. We started hitting those rollers. We got to about mile 10, and you have like this gentle down, gentle up, gentle down, gentle up. And on one of those ups, I took the lead a little bit, and we're all still very, very closely knit. But Anthony tries to come up on my side, and I start listening in on his breathing, and he's breathing pretty hard, a lot harder than I would think that he should be breathing. So I internally checked how am I feeling, and yeah, I felt pretty good. So I thought, well, let's see how these other two are doing. You know, I kind of glanced back at Bryant. He was running smooth, but he seemed like he was breathing a little bit hard. And Montana was, you know, two or three steps back, kind of struggling on the uphill. And that was the first time.
Montana.
That was the first. Yeah, that's my nickname for him, Montana man. But that was the first time that I felt, you know, I think I might be able to win this thing.
Hammer's coming down.
Yeah. But my plan was patience. Don't, you know, it's still very early. Stay with these guys and work with them as long as you can, because you're going to want to work with people in the headwind if I wanted any chance at the course record, which I wanted big time. I've been training for that course record, but Mother Nature had other plans. But we all four of us were together at the half marathon, and then that's when it became more of a battle of attrition. And I think Anthony was the first to fall off the back, and then Montana fell off. Both of them fell off right after the half, and it was Bryant and me going down into the hill. And then right as we're about ready to hit the hill, that was the first 30 mile per hour gust in our face. And I turned to Bryant and I said, "Are you freaking kidding me? Like, it's already bad enough. Now you're throwing this wind at us."
So this is mile 14, the hill at mile 14.
Right.
Yeah, it's
right, yeah,
on the west side of the reservoir.
Right. And so without trying to, I got a gap on Bryant on the hill there. I didn't feel like I had increased my effort at all. And there was just no turning back from there. The wind picked up big time right around 16, 17, 18. Was the stretch where it was like hurricane monsoon conditions right in your face. You had rain traveling at you, 30, 40 mile per hour gusts, and it just felt like needles hitting my skin, and it was painful. And the mile 17 aid station looked like a post-apocalyptic film. You know, it looked like it just carnage, total carnage. Oh, just, the wind had just destroyed that aid station.
We'll officially thank the volunteers at mile 17.
Now's a good time to say it, but the volunteers were unbelievable. Like, we could talk all day long about how awesome the volunteers were, and we still wouldn't have said enough about the volunteers. I mean, those were some of the worst conditions I've not only raced in, but run in. And I did not see a single volunteer who had an unhappy demeanor. All of them were still smiling and happy to be there, even though they have this rain blowing on them. They were still very supportive, very happy, and they were awesome.
So that's a little bit of a prophecy we put on the back of their volunteer shirts this year. Best volunteers on the planet. And this year, if any year, has proved that for sure. And we are so thankful for those guys.
Absolutely. You can't say enough about the job that they did. They were true soldiers out there in that storm. It was cool to see. So then I looked back at the spillway there as I take my turn, and I couldn't see anybody. And I thought, this is it. 8 more miles. The weather's terrible, but nothing's stopping me now. I was laser focused, and you had a headwind all the way down the canyon, but I was able to just keep on going.
At this point, were you thinking, okay, I'm in the lead by quite a ways? Did you put it in cruise control, or were you still like chasing that course record mark?
Well, I knew the course record was gone. When I hit those gusts of wind there from 16 to 19 or so, the wind, like, if you look at my pace chart, you'll see my pace drop from like 5:20s to as slow as 7:30 without any change in effort, just from the headwind that was coming down on us. And in the canyon there, I was able to run like 5:40s, 5:30s, when usually I would think that I should be in the 5:10s there, but there was just headwind that entire way in the canyon. So it was just all about winning at this point. I knew the course record was not going to happen. I don't think anybody could have broke the course record in those conditions.
So what is the course record, and how far off were you?
It's in the high 2:22s, so I was about almost exactly 3 minutes off.
That's pretty close.
Yeah. I, I believe any other day with normal conditions, I think I could have had it.
Yeah, Seth Wold holds the course record, and funny enough, you know, he approached me. He was just out of he just graduated Utah State and said, "Hey, you know, can you get me an entry?" I, you know, was still the owner of Striders at that point, and we had some entries. So he reached out. I got him in. I think he just ran it on a whim, and it's been raining a lot the last several years, and he just laughs every single year when he goes, "I still got the course record," you know.
Yeah. No, actually, so this. Here's something funny is Bryant and I turned to each other around mile 9 or so, and I said, "Seth Wold's got to have like a voodoo doll of the Ogden Marathon."
Yeah, he's doing the rain dance every year.
And every time he thinks somebody might break his course record, he's just stabbing that voodoo doll with pins. And here comes the wind and the rain, and yeah, it was pretty crazy. But so, then I got to the parkway, and it was just. You know, doing the, I call it the half marathoner weave. There's a pretty thick crowd of half marathoners still. And I think usually they have a lead bike for the lead marathoner, but I did not have an escort. And so I was just weaving in and out of half marathoners, yelling, "Heads up, watch out," coming through, stepping off to the side a few times. And
yeah, Brian left. But I believe the lead guy that was supposed to be on his bike being your escort wouldn't get out of his car.
Yeah.
So you're on your own.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he could have stayed on his bike with some of those gusts of
wind.
Yeah,
he would have blown in the river.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, I made that turn on Grant Avenue, and it was really hard to celebrate because I was so cold and so tired, but I saw my family, ran over, gave them all some high fives, and then right at the very end, I finally mustered up some energy to celebrate and finish strong.
You're listening to Mr. Goodyear's Neighborhood, produced by the Banyan Collective. Find more episodes of Mr. Goodyear's Neighborhood at thebanyancollective.com and on iTunes. Mr. Goodyear's Neighborhood, a podcast about a mountain town run by mountain people.
You know, on the drive over here, I'm neighbors with Mike McBride, who's the operations guy. He pretty much puts the race together. And he said, "Man, you know, the look," and I told him what we were doing to come and interview you. And he says, "Tell him congratulations for me." And just the look of sheer emotion and triumph on your face when you cross the finish line just kind of summed up the whole day.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of marathoners. And he knew, you know, you had, you know, struggled through some of the Ogden Marathon, so it just all came together for you. And anyway, just that picture in the paper is probably the best, you know, Ogden Marathon finishing picture I think I've seen. So,
oh, yeah, thanks. Yeah, that was 5 years of frustration. Finally, you know, weighted the bricks off my shoulders and finally did well at my hometown race.
So we had Bart Yasso on the show the day before the marathon. Did you do any of those Yasso's 800s?
No.
Getting ready?
Yeah. No, actually, like I said, we did a lot of marathon-specific stuff. So the shortest intervals that we actually did was 3,000 meters, and those were way back in April, the week before the winter circuit half marathon. And then we increased those every 2 weeks to 4,000 meters, 5,000 meters. So we didn't do anything under 3,000 meters. We were trying to focus right in on that as close as we can to marathon pace.
So for runners that, you know, want to qualify for Boston and maybe go out and race the marathon as opposed to just going out and surviving it, what's a good workout or what does a runner need to do to actually get faster without becoming injured?
I think it's important to do longer tempo efforts in the neighborhood of the pace that you want to run your marathon at. You know, depending on your level of running and how many miles your background would vary depending on how far you should do that tempo run. But I think you need to get comfortable doing some longer distances at the pace that you're hoping to run your marathon at. And of course, I tell anyone that wants to get better at the marathon, your mileage is everything. The more miles you run, the faster you're going to be able to run. There's a direct correlation between your average weekly mileage and how fast you're going to run your marathons.
I remember when Todd and Brandon sat down with Jeff Galloway at last year's Marathon Expo. his favorite training routine was he would go out and run like 30 plus miles on his long runs. Just so mentally, you know, 26 didn't seem that long. And what you're saying makes sense. You know, if you want to run an 8 minute per mile marathon average, but you're training at 9 minutes per mile, you can't expect your body to do something
right.
that it hasn't done before in training.
Right. And some of our key workouts were we did a 16-mile tempo run at marathon pace and then a 18-mile tempo run at marathon pace. And we did both of those runs on the marathon course, wow. the first 16 and the first 18 miles of the race. And so when I it was, I believe, 3 weeks out from the marathon, I did 18 miles at a 5:27 average, which is actually faster than I ran the marathon at Saturday. And I felt really good that day. I was hoping that was – I was like, too bad this isn't the day because I feel like I could have kept going. But it gives you good confidence to do those kind of workouts.
So 2:25:51, is that – that's not your fastest marathon time, though.
No, that's not. My fastest is 2:21 at the Phoenix Marathon. But I honestly believe that this was a better performance than that 2:21.
So how badly would you have kicked Seth's butt had the weather been good?
Yeah, it's hard to say, you know, how much the wind makes a difference. But we'll just leave it at Seth still has the course record.
You would have kicked
and
his
I'm
track,
still hungry for
yeah.
it.
Well, if your numbers are right, so you back all the way down to a 7-something pace off of 5 through those headwinds. That's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't the pace for the entire area. That's the
sure.
slowest pace. But, yeah, my slowest mile was 6:04, and that was right before the canyon. And then the steepest mile of the race, I was like 5:54, where I should have been like 5:05. So even just in those 2 miles, I feel like I lost 2 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the average... Your average pace for a 2:25 marathon is 5:34 per mile.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think I could do that on my bike. That's fast. I don't know.
John, your distance. Your distance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my stuff. I mean, you're going fast, you know, 15 miles per mile. 15 minute mile.
Yeah.
Out on the trails. But. So what are your aspirations? I mean, this was your 9th race this year, if I counted them up right. You won the half marathon, the winter racing circuit, and you've ran several half marathons this year, and you've pretty much won them all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's only, you know, we're only halfway through 2016. What do you got planned for the rest of the year?
I am a serial racer. I love to race. I love to race. I race almost every 2 to 3 weeks. Which our Irish friend doesn't think is the best for training, but I love it. I love the half marathon. I'll do those. I could do those every weekend, no problem. But my goals for the year is to break 105 in the half and to break 220 in the marathon. I'm signed up for the St. George Marathon, but I'm also toying with maybe doing a Huntsville-St. George double.
Wow,
which are 2 weeks apart.
2 weeks apart, yeah. How are your toenails holding up? Do you have any toenails?
I told you, those Brooks Pure Cadence, man, they feel awesome. They are so good for my feet. I don't get any blisters or anything. Any other shoe destroys my feet, but those ones are just like a glove.
Wow.
Great.
So the paper said you're an Olympic. You have aspirations to run in the Olympics. So what do you need to run? What's the qualifying mark to qualify for the Olympic trials in the marathon?
Well, yeah, so I was hoping to qualify for the trials, but that ship has kind of sailed. They held the trials already. So, but last year I was trying to qualify for the Olympic trials. You had to run 2:18 at a non-downhill course. So I attempted it at the Chicago Marathon, but I had one of my mucus build-up, throw-up incidents there at Chicago. I was on pace at the halfway point, but then I got sick, and I think I finished in like 2:26, so it didn't really work out. So that ship is kind of sailed, but who knows, maybe in 3 years, if I'm still in shape, I'll be an old man by then, but,
so you're 30, you're 35.
I'm 35. I just turned 35.
Yeah.
So next Olympic cycle, I would be, you know, 38 when I'm trying to qualify.
Well, how old is Meb? Meb is like our age. He's like,
he's 40.
Early
yeah.
40s. Yeah.
Yeah. He's 40.
So there's still some hope out there.
He's immortal though. So,
well, he's an alien. He's not from this planet.
Right. Exactly. He's an inspiration, though, that he runs so well at 40. That's awesome.
Well, you so you're from Ogden. You ran at Weber State. What were your events at Weber State?
I was a middle distance runner at Weber State. I ran my main event was the 1500 meters, and then I ran the 800 meters, and occasionally the 5000.
And Bryant, he's the other local runner that's won the Ogden Marathon, and Mark Jelly, for that matter. He was like the original Ogden native that, that won the marathon. So between the three of you, who's the better runner? I know you Weber State runners talk smack to each other, so it's okay.
I would say Bryant has the best history with the marathon. He has, you know, he has the fastest marathon out of us. I think Bryant and I are quite evenly matched at the half marathon. I have a little bit faster PR, but we're pretty close, and we go back and forth. Anything under there, I can usually beat Bryant. I think he may have a faster 10K PR at Weber State, and then I have the faster 5K and down, 5K, 1500, 800 mile.
On your blog, you said you were injured a lot while running at Weber State. So now that you're graduated and you know, running marathons, what are the things you do to, you know, prevent injury so you can keep being a serial racer?
Consistency is my key now. At Weber State, I was extremely inconsistent with my running. I was very lazy. Coach Hislop will attest to this. I was very lazy over the summers when we were left to run on our own. I worked at 6 in the morning, and by the time I got off, it was hot. And like I didn't do very good at all on my summers. And so then I would show up to cross country camp, and coach would immediately have me doing these hard workouts, you know, increasing my mileage from essentially zero to 50 to 60 miles a week, and I would get injured from these wild swings in training. And so a lot of that was definitely my fault. I don't blame Coach Hislop at all. It was just poor inconsistency on my part. But now I'm a lot more dedicated to running, which is ironic now that I'm not even on a team.
We're sitting down with Riley Cook, the 2016 winner of the Ogden Marathon. Ran a 2:25:51. And Riley's about to tell us about his family life. I mean, tell us about the balance. You graduated Weber State, you're employed, so congratulations on that, because a lot of collegiate athletes, you know, getting over that hump is hard for them, I know. So what do you do?
I'm a cost analyst over at Hill Air Force Base, which is pretty boring stuff.
But married with three young kids.
Yeah, I have three girls. They are 5, 3, and 1, and we have a baby on the way.
Wow. Oh, congratulations.
Which
yeah.
We're not going to find out the gender on, because
it's just funner that
way,
right?
Yeah, it's funner, yeah.
So how do you balance all the miles you're doing and keeping mama happy at home?
You know, it's difficult because my wife's a runner too. She also ran at Weber State. She ran the half marathon pregnant at Ogden and did quite well. I think she took 9th place.
A first for probably pregnant runners.
Yeah, I think so. Probably first in the pregnancy class.
Yeah, between her and Soraya Long, I think Soraya ran it pregnant 1 year.
Yeah, I think last year she did. Yeah.
Yeah.
She comes back fast too from her pregnancies. But you know, I take the morning shift usually. I run before work. We'll usually meet the guys around 5 a.m. And then Amy will. Sometimes she'll push the girls when she's home. Or she'll run when I get home from work. And it's hard to fit it all in, especially the last 4 weeks when I'm trying to really ramp up my mileage. But she's very supportive of it, and she knows that it's important to me to try to train hard for the race, and somehow we fit it all in.
Well, congratulations again. I thought we'd have a little bit of fun here, because we do have a fair amount of listeners that know nothing about running, and they hear these running terms and they have no idea what they are. So I'm going to throw them out at you, and maybe you give your definition of them. So the first one is PR. What is a, in the running world, what is a PR?
PR is a personal record, and it's the fastest time that you've run for a specific distance.
How about hit the wall? Like
hit the wall yeah.
In metaphorical terms, yeah.
Hit the wall is more of a marathon term, and it's that point in the race, usually around 18 to 20 miles, where all of a sudden you feel extremely terrible. You've depleted your glycogen stores and you are in big trouble.
A lot of that falls back on nutrition. We talked about this a little bit before we went live on the air, and that's you're using a product or products now to help with nausea and you know, your body burning calories more efficiently. So is there any nutritional advice you'd give to any runners out there, and you know, how to perform better?
Well, the nutritional answer that I just found recently is a product called Generation UCAN. And actually, Meb, who we just spoke about, uses UCAN, and so does Dathan Ritzenhine, who is one of the fastest marathoners in the country. And it's a, they call it a super starch. It doesn't have any sugar. And so, you know, they advertise it as it's not going to give you the sugar spike and then, or insulin spike that can sometimes come with gels. But it's a slow release carb is what they say. And so you take it half hour to 45 minutes before the race and it'll just slowly digest. And it digests in your intestines instead of in your stomach. So it doesn't bother your stomach. And it just keeps kind of a slow release, steady energy throughout the race. And then you take it one more time during the race.
So Generation UCAN. The next one is VO2 max. What the heck is VO2 max?
I don't know what the heck VO2 max is.
All right, next.
Some scientific term, you know. It's like, I think it's like the maximum amount of oxygen you can take up.
Ding, you're right, because I actually had to write it down. It's the volume of oxygen a runner's body consumes per minute.
No, but that's a good thing, because like some people are really concerned about this, you know. They're like, well, if I could just get my VO2 max up, but as a competitive runner, it's a number that you're not really too concerned about.
Yeah, I have no clue what my VO2 max is.
Okay,
yeah,
that's interesting.
It's basically your aerobic engine,
right?
So you want to get faster, just run faster, don't get hurt.
I mean, basically I know when I'm running at VO2 max, I can tell in my body. I couldn't tell you any scientific numbers behind it though, what it is.
Like your competitors in the marathon, you know, they were laboring, breathing heavy, and they were probably exceeding their VO2 max.
And I'm wondering, you know, each at that level, something you had for breakfast may affect it, or something, you know, the rain and everything. Like you said, the one runner was laboring with his breathing. And for one, I kind of want to know what that does to you psychologically, if that gives you a little boost or something. But that could happen to anyone at the front of the pack at any time, right?
Right. And yeah, if you do notice that somebody's breathing heavier than you are, and if they're breathing heavier than they were, then there's a good chance they're going to fall off pace soon. And that is a good time to throw in what we call a surge, which is a short increase in pace.
Just kill them all.
Right. Yeah. I chose not to do that because of the weather conditions. But honestly, I think that both Anthony and Bryant ended up dropping out of the race. And I think they had a hard time staying warm. Their bodies... trying to run that fast but also trying to keep your temperature up, sometimes it doesn't work out. And
yeah, when you mentioned that they dropped back, I was curious, when they say or they drop off, how off is that typically? Like when you drop off, are you like, screw it, I'm down to super slow pace now, or do you still try and hang toward, I mean, you know, like how far back do you typically drop, or do runners drop back?
Well, under normal conditions, usually you would, when your pace drops like that, it's maybe like 10 to 20 seconds a mile, and you know, slowly the person who kept going at that pace is just going to pull away from you, and it's kind of, the race is kind of over. But here, I had a friend in the canyon who said that Montana Man was only 2 minutes behind me at mile 21. Oh, wow. But I beat him by 8 minutes, and so his pace must have fallen off severely those last 5 miles. He was probably hating it.
Yeah, he went to what I call survival mode.
Yeah.
Welcome to Utah, Montana.
Yeah. And I believe both Bryant and Anthony dropped out of the race before they got to the canyon, there where the winds were so bad that their bodies just shut down. They were just too cold. They couldn't keep their heat up.
So talk to us about LSD. What is LSD in the running
LSD
world?
That's a little thing that we use to... Oh, wait, no. That's that's a long, slow distance.
Oh, okay.
Long, slow distance.
I don't believe in long, slow distance. Not for the marathon, anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's great for ultra running. You could probably speak to that.
So you really don't go long, slow distance. It's always
goes long, fast distance.
Yeah. Try to keep it marathon specific. Our long runs, we try to keep 88% of marathon pace at the slowest. Yeah.
What the heck's a singlet?
Singlet. That is a racing jersey, tank top.
And this year you had in your race singlet, you had Utah running on there. So how many of you guys run for that team? This is the team that the Ken and Janae put together, right?
It is, yeah.
Richardson, I should say.
Yeah.
Utah running, yeah.
So they actually have a lot more fast women than they do men. The women's team is extremely strong. almost all the fast women in this area run for Utah Running. Soraya Long, who run the half, she runs for them. And then Ken and I, we both, obviously it's his company, he runs for Utah Running. And then just recently this year, I started running for Utah Running. I got dropped by Brooks, sadly, last year. So,
you know, you bring that up, and I know that after I left Striders, I was told after the fact that you'd reached out and, you know, looking for a sponsor. So on the record, had I still been there, I would have picked you up.
Just awesome.
So, you know, I would have made you a millionaire, dang it.
Well, in an alternate universe, that's going on right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hopped on with their Utah Running team. Some of the other guys we run with, Ben Van Beekum, who I mentioned earlier, and Jason Holt, who won the half marathon, they both run for Skechers. And then Bryant took my spot on Brooks. So he runs for Brooks.
Oh.
Well, I wouldn't say he took my spot. He got put on the team, and I got kicked off the team.
I was going to say, so how competitive does it get with you guys? I mean, are you friends outside of just training together? Or I imagine there's got to be a lot of smack talking going on during training sessions.
Yeah.
Like, how was it when you went back after winning the marathon? Like, drop the mic, suckers. How did that feel, you know?
I try to keep it pretty reasonable. What's fun is
scoreboard. That's what
what's fun is Ken and Ben are very, very close fitness-wise. And so in all of our workouts, you know, I'm out in front, and those two are doing the same workout a little bit behind me. But at one point, Ben said to Ken, no, it would be so awesome if we were together at the end and we were able to, you know, finish together. And Ken says, screw that, man. It would be awesome. It would be awesome if we were together until 25, and then we just start throwing body punches at each other and see who can gut it out the best. And Ben's like, all right, man, game on.
Neither one will cross the finish line because they're doing an MMA match, you know, 10 meters before the finish.
But, yeah, we're great friends, really good friends. But, I mean, yeah, of course we all want to beat each other. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's awesome. what's a snot rocket?
Ooh, I'm very good at the snot rocket. That is where you cover one of your nostrils and blow out any of your excess snot.
It does make you faster.
It's similar to the farmer blow, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Whoa, farmer what?
Whoa.
Oh, is that the same thing? Ah. We'll finish it up with a fart lick. What's a fart lick?
Fart lick. That's a fun word. I believe it's Swedish for speed play. And it's the type of workout where you're adjusting your pace back and forth, kind of alternating paces. A lot of people actually call it a wave nowadays.
Speed play.
Yeah.
I like it.
So when I do a good fart lick workout, I say, that was fart looking good.
Fart looking good. I'm sure your wife is real proud of you, right?
Yeah, she is. If she knew half of the conversations we had in the early morning, she would just be embarrassed.
Yeah?
Just shake her head. Her and Janae Richardson, when Ken and I get together, the two of them just constantly rolling their eyes and shaking their heads.
Well, I'm sure there's stuff that goes on with the female training groups that would make you guys blush, yeah.
I can guarantee that they have similar conversations, yeah.
Yeah, they just keep it more secret.
Well, Riley, congratulations. I can't, you know, you've inspired all of us. I know you inspired Brandon specifically because I saw him running up Buse Canyon the other day.
Like running, yeah.
Awesome, yeah.
And it's great that, you know, you brought the title back home. I love some of those Salt Lake runners, but I hate it when they come in town and, you know, win our race. So I'll challenge you and all the other, you know, Ogden crew, you know, keep the title home, man. Keep it here.
That's our goal. I started using the hashtag Take Ogden Back leading up to the race, but it didn't really catch on.
So Soraya, she thought she had set a new course record running a 1:18, but I guess she was just off the mark from Cynthia Fowler's race back in 2007, 1:17. But, you know, so you have Soraya Long. Are there some other, you know, female marathoners that, you know, coming on board that, you know, can dominate the marathon distance for the years to come?
You know, Cynthia has been really one of the dominant in this race. I believe she had to drop out this year, unfortunately. I mean, the weather was just so bad, the dropout rate was really high. But there are
the piercing needles on the
skin. Yeah, that wind, man, it was terrible. But the women, for some reason, they really like the half marathon here at Ogden instead of the full. I don't know.
Do you want to hear my theory on that?
Let's hear it.
Well, because a lot of these women are moms, right? And after a half marathon, they can finish and still be moms. Where, you know, like the dads, from my experience, they finish a marathon, they're done. They're like, keep the kids away. No one touch me.
Yeah.
I am done.
Yeah, it's I have a theory also, actually, on that. Uh-huh. And that is so there's a lot of other marathons, some of the other major marathons in the state. Their podium is 5 to 10 deep. St. George gives out prizes to the top 10 overall, and then Utah Valley and Top of Utah gives out prizes to the top 5 overall, and Ogden does 3. And so your chances at hitting the podium go up if you train for one of those other marathons as opposed to Ogden. So I think a lot of, like Ben Van Beekum, he hates the Ogden Marathon because he's had a bad history with it too. And I have a hard time getting him to sign up, and that's one of the reasons why is he can go run Utah Valley 3 weeks later and he has a much better chance of hitting the podium.
Winning some money. Yeah.
And so historically he's always done the half marathon instead of the full for that reason.
Just kind of a setup to...
Yeah, just, I mean, if you put a lot of time and effort into, you know, trying to do well at a marathon, if you think you can win some prize money in another race, then that's mm-hmm. kind of the way that people go.
So how much did you win winning? Are you a millionaire now? You just won the Ogden Marathon?
The Ogden Marathon is, you know, I think it's $100,000. No, it's $1,100. Yeah.
That's not a...
Yeah, it's a good payday, yeah.
It's so is it worth all the
for 5 hours or no for like total for, like the start, like hanging out at the beach, like, you know, from when you get on the bus to finish, it's like how long's your day?
It's you know, get on the buses at 5, finish, cross the line at, I don't, what was it, maybe like 9:15.
Yeah.
But if you look at the hourly wage for all of my training leading into it, it's probably like 75 cents an hour.
Well, it's a good incentive. Yeah,
keep
and,
my
you know,
day job.
You know, as I support, you know, prize money and increasing prize money for races because, you know, you get stories like this and it makes the race more competitive. And, you know, I mean, if you had 10,000 people finishing in 4 hours, it wouldn't be that exciting, you know. So I totally support prize money, especially if I'm winning it.
Yeah,
so.
That's right. Me too.
Sweet. Is that it?
That's all I got, unless you guys got any more questions for I mean, he's about ready to go run now. I can't believe you're running this soon already. I mean, it's been 6 days.
I don't handle not running well. My day just doesn't go as well if I don't run, so awesome. I got to get back to it.
Cheaper in therapy. You got to tell the Utah running people that you need that fart looking good on the back of the shirt. Well, congratulations, and thank you for meeting us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been fun.